Hi, welcome to the Great Women in Compliance podcast with Hema Lomax and Lisa Fine. We are sponsored by Corporate Compliance Insights and produced by Tom Fox and the Compliance Podcast Network. Today's guest is Amy Mertz Brown. She is currently the SVP Chief Compliance and Privacy Officer at BECU, which is a member-owned not-for-profit credit union. Amy has been a leader in the regulatory compliance space, including as the Chief Compliance Officer for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission and at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. She's also one of those people that, you know, when I was able to record her, as I've gotten to know her, I'm always so excited that this is someone I know and my friend. And I think what she's done and accomplished is so fabulous. I'm like so excited you're here. And thank you so much, Amy, for joining me. So why don't we just start by jumping into it and telling us how you got into compliance?
Yeah, I was basically an in-house counsel for a bunch of different federal agencies, all in the financial services space. And probably about 10 years ago, I started thinking, what do I have and what I do here in the government have in common with private sector companies? And I was really looking for ideas to enliven, get me excited, enliven what I was doing inside my agencies. And so I started networking with the industry. I joined the ECI and started going to some conferences. And then I realized that there's so many things in common that I really love the industry and I love the people in the industry. And I also realized that as an in-house counsel, I really gravitated toward the advisory work much more than some of the other work. And so I kept turning toward compliance more and more. And then I really made the shift to it when I joined the SEC as their chief compliance officer.
That's interesting. And especially I've been thinking a lot about lately the difference in regulatory compliance and privacy, where you're a leader in both of those, which you have such strict laws and requirements that particularly in regulatory banking, if you don't follow those rules, you may not be able to continue business, or as you put it, like a certain number of days for disclosures. And if not, you're in violation. How do you build and maintain that kind of program? A lot of our listeners are like me doing anti-bribery, anti-corruption, where we have to sell compliance. When you have that, how do you do it? And what kind of keeps you up at night as a result?
Right. Basically, what we really need to focus on employee training and detailed work instructions as to how to do whatever task it is in compliance with the applicable regulation. There's so many different regulations. We don't really emphasize like everybody needs to know every regulation and be able to cite every provision of it. It's really like, how does it relate to the job that I'm doing? And how do I make sure I need to know the law that applies to the job I'm doing or the tasks? And then how do I comply? And what am I looking for non-compliance? So it's a lot of training and work instructions. Then we also do a lot of testing and monitoring of activities around the company. That's really important with a regulatory compliance, especially in the financial services industry. And we have a three lines of defense model, which is the first line is the business unit. The second line is really the regulatory compliance oversight of the business unit. And then there's internal audit that audits us as well as the first line. So that structure keeps everybody focused on their part of the puzzle. And then it helps us understand what our lane is. We're not trying to do everything. We're not trying to do the business. We're trying to oversee the business. And what keeps me up at night? It's like, what are we missing? Are we missing anything? Is there some weird law that we hadn't thought of that applies to what we do in some way that nobody's tested yet? And so I spend a lot of my time off the job reading, looking at inputs and writings from other people in the industry and what they're talking about. And a lot of former colleagues from other agencies that talk about things and on LinkedIn, et cetera. And I really spend a lot of time looking at that and reading those things. And then the other thing really is, what will the regulators do next? That's half of it, is trying to predict and aim yourself in the direction that you think they'll be going, because it is very difficult to turn on a dime when you have a new requirement. So we try to anticipate what's happening and start doing some thinking about it before something hits the law.
Yeah. It's interesting, because as you're saying that, I think about oftentimes when I'm training or working with people, it is your responsibility is to know the red flags and the problems so you can raise them to us. You don't necessarily have to know the law. For you, It's the opposite. If you don't know the law, it may be a red flag.
Yeah. But it's like, you also don't have to be like, you know, you don't have to be able to train. If you're doing a new account opening task, you don't necessarily need to know every provision of the applicable regulation. You just need to know your work instructions tell you what to do. And then you have to have that awareness. But yes, it's as you described it. Yeah.
I feel like it's a very interesting and different approach. I've just been thinking about this a lot lately. When we always talk about tailored programs, some programs tailor right. themselves more than others by virtue of what they do.
Right.
This is, you, as you just mentioned, you had spent a lot of your career in various government roles. And then you, including being chief compliance officer at the SEC, once you came into the private sector after that, what surprised you the most? And then I guess as a follow-up, what brought you to the roles that you've done, and particularly your current role at BECU?
I was actually surprised at how similar it was to what where I had worked before. There's a few things that there's not, the employment law is not as strong in the private sector as it is in the government, things like that. But it's, I guess my whole career since I've been at financial services agencies like the SBA, CFPB, Treasury, always had been working with bankers, former bankers, lawyers that serve bankers. And so it really, each of the agencies that I have been at were very similar to and operated a business in some sense with the government layers on top of that. So I was surprised at how similar it was and how I could unlearn some things like, I don't need to know the details of the Title VII federal employment law stuff anymore because that doesn't apply. So that was nice. What and how I got to BECU, well, I was between positions looking for my next adventure, trying to figure out what do I really want to do next? Where do I want to offer my value and my judgment at this stage in my career? And it was nice to have that time to really think that through and experiment with different ideas. And I basically came to the thought that I would be best served working in a financial services institution as in compliance and preferably a medium-sized company. And then I saw the posting at BECU and a former colleague of mine from the CFPB works here. And so I contacted him and he just loved the place and really sold me on the company. And so then he referred me and then I went through the interview process and that's how I got the position. And so far, so good.
That's great. And one of the things you said right there makes me think when people ask me about jobs or ideas or how do you decide what to do and they find it daunting, I often say, think about what you don't want to start. If you don't want to move, if you don't right. want to be in a huge publicly traded company, if you're concerned about. So I think as you were elaborating on that, it sounds like you had two things meshed at the same time. Knowing what you actually wanted and seeing people who enjoyed it and having a positive work environment.
Exactly. Yeah. It helps you narrow your focus and not waste time spinning around, spinning your wheels, chasing rabbits down a rabbit hole.
And then you forget whether you wanted said rabbit hole because it becomes,
yes.
Sure, I can do this. And then happiness. I think people do that. I hadn't fully realized till we talked couple of weeks ago, and I fully researched this. I didn't realize that you had been at the CFPB right as it was established.
Yes.
And then moving to the SEC. So you've been like on the front lines of a lot of this. So what do you see as your biggest success, particularly from the start of the CFPB? And what are, as a follow-up, what do you see as the most significant issues today in regulatory compliance?
Yeah, I have to point to my time at CFPB in the startup phase is really one of the highlights of my career. It was just so amazing to do that. I felt we had a very small team. I started when there was only 25 people in the whole agency, and we were still under the wing of Treasury. And then we built that place from 25 to 15, 1600 when I left and after 8 years. So it was a lot of fun at the beginning. And it was very much like an experience of being at a startup company because we didn't have a formal payroll system. We were developing job announcements and job descriptions. And it was just very much all hands on deck, just do everything that needs to be done all at the same time. What I loved about it was I had quite a few years of government experience by then. And I felt like I brought everything I had ever done before to bear on that exercise, including management, the law that applied to our agency, just different training techniques, everything I had known and learned before that I brought to bear. So it was like firing on all pistons. And I really love that experience. And some of the colleagues that I have from that time are still very close today.
So and growing something, I was just going to interrupt and say, and growing something is so much fun. It's afterwards that sometimes it comes a little less fun when you have to maintain, but that was great.
And I understand now why people love the startup environment and keep going from startup to startup, because it's just so exciting and such a fast paced thing. And then I can also understand why some people don't like it, because it is a little bit unnerving. I accepted a formal position with them before they really had an org structure or even a job description. And so that was a bit of a bumpy ride getting through that process, but I had trust and luckily it all worked out well. And then just one of the most significant issues, keeping up with the regulators, like I talked about before, that's a really difficult challenge, particularly in the current environment with a lot of federal agencies and even some state agencies, you know, leaning forward on some of the activity. We've noticed a major uptick in activity, a lot of different kinds of activity, not just regulatory, but opinions, statements, guidance, all kinds of material that the regulators are issuing that give us a clue as to what they're thinking. And so it's keeping up with all that is quite challenging at the moment. And then the other challenge, I think, that really everybody, and particularly in financial services, but I would think in any industry where there's civil law that you're really worrying about, it's trying to interpret and apply those laws with a risk tolerance level in mind. And you can't be zero tolerance on everything when it's a civil type of law. You might have a risk tolerance that's a little bit higher in some areas than other areas. And so you really have to look to your leadership, like your board and your CEO, to define that risk tolerance and then adapt yourself to that. So it's finding that right calibration between risk and reward is something that I think is a real challenge.
I think it becomes an even bigger challenge in that area, not only with the huge amount of things that are there, but the more global and regulatory things that apply here. I'm at a large company that's all over the world, and I've thought a lot about this. And I think I was mentioning it a bit earlier, that this idea of going highly regulated to not regulated, but on the other hand, how to, for example, if a company acquires a business in Latin America or somewhere else that came from a local government or only one country, and then suddenly they're responsible for the UKBA, FCPA, a whole bunch of things that have zero to do with them or their country. It's hard enough to enforce compliance when, and it's a legitimate concern when you're in a not pharma, finance, government contracting. But what do you see as some of the similarities and differences there, looking at it through a global lens?
Yeah, we are not a global company, but I know a lot of people like you, that is definitely a big part of their practice. And I think some of the similarities are worrying about the company culture, and particularly with acquisitions, bringing new pieces into the corporate culture and how to really affirm and reaffirm and constantly emphasize the culture of the company. And then, of course, training and communication is so important. Just having that outreach and touch points to the company and its leaders and its employees, how to figure out all the different channels that you can talk about compliance and integrity and influence those people from that level. I think one of the other common things is just the tone at the top, the middle management, the change management. Those are bigger themes that really apply to every single company. And if you don't have those things, all of your three lines of defense and whatever else, it falls by the wayside if you don't have those things. So I think those are, and then maybe some reporting too, whether it's reporting to the board or reporting to internal people about what's happening with, and encouraging internal reporting, like people to talk about mistakes or issues that they're seeing and report them on a whistleblower line or similar kind of thing. I think that's really important to emphasize and is very similar to really any compliance program. And then some of the distinctions, I think, really less focus on criminal law. That's not our number one concern or worry. We're really more worried about civil issues like fines from the regulators or enforcement or examination, oversight type activities from a regulator. as well as civil litigation from people in the marketplace that could be upset with us for something, and then they have a private right of action. there are quite a few laws in my space that have that right. And so those are the two really different things that I think applies to our company versus a global.
Yeah, that's interesting. One of my biggest challenges, and these are legitimate things people raise, it's how am I in a small part of the business in a country that I personally don't, my senior tone at the top person is my general manager. And
yeah,
how do I get that escalated? And how do we explain it in a way that resonates with them, that sometimes for me, it's reminding them that they got a lot of benefits when they joined a large organization. And this is one of the things that's a problem.
You don't want to start with, you could go to jail if you don't do this. Like, that's not a great message. You have to include that, but it doesn't inspire people to be excited about following this law. So that's a real challenge, right? How do you talk about it in a way that talks about the purpose behind the laws and not emphasize the criminal aspect? Yeah. This was what I did in the government, because as a government ethics manager, there are some laws in that area that have a criminal penalty potential. So I understand that dilemma of how to share the news about the law without kind of hitting them over the head with a sledgehammer. Yeah.
We always try to assume, and I'm sure as you probably did in the government, and now you're assuming positive intent, it's interpreted differently. And sometimes somebody say something that will make sense and for them, and or even sometimes I'm like, this is just what it says. I can't change that for you. Let's figure out a way to talk about it from your standpoint. But I always find that to be, you know, interesting, because you put in the regulation challenges, language, geography, and for you, it's less of that, but you have much more extensive laws that everyone needs to be aware of. And I think that's, as I've been thinking about talking with you today and talking about that, I find that just really interesting.
Yeah, the differences between. Mm-hmm.
And I guess to completely change a little bit of the topic is that you recently, we talked about imposter syndrome, and you turned me on to a woman named Reshma Sojani. And if I misstated your name, Reshma, I apologize. And I really like this idea that she challenged the concept itself. And I haven't gotten as deep into it as your explanation was pretty awesome. But she's basically saying that when we as women or anyone else focuses on our feelings about the inadequacies that give us imposter syndrome, we're implicitly making ourselves the problem. And we're actually, instead of focusing on the systems or the other things that, you know, are wrong, we're using our energy towards why don't we feel like we're enough? Is that, I mean, can you talk a little bit about that and how it's influencing your thinking right now?
It's really something that I've come to in the past 6 to 9 months. I think, you know, the job transition led to it a little bit too, we don't need to buy into the idea that there's something wrong with us that we need to fix. That's where imposter syndrome comes from. There's something wrong with me. I'm in a situation, I don't feel adequate, and that now I have to fix me. And she really turns that on its head. She says she was in the corporate world for many years, and then that lean in, do better, succeed at all costs environment. And then she became really unhappy. And then she left her corporate world and did all kinds of interesting things. So this is something she's come to later in her career too. So I say that because I've heard from younger women that, you know, you can't just decide not to feel inadequate. But actually, I think you can, but I understand that it's harder for more junior people who are still getting comfortable with their own skills. So the idea that she's putting forth is recognizing that the systems around us are not necessarily friendly to women. And so it's easy to develop the mindset of there's something wrong with me because I don't fit this environment. As opposed to thinking, I'm fine. The environment is messed up because why isn't it welcoming me and bring what I can bring? And so it's really more of a mindset change and more of a recognition that the environment isn't really made for me. Right. And I can just think about what I have to offer and then try to influence the environment to change because I have something valid and very valuable to offer. And so it's a real different mindset. It's like choosing confidence and choosing to present your ideas and your being in a different way And I'm just excited about the idea. And it just even talking about it, when you see people talk about imposter syndrome, just watch their face. They get sad and there's something wrong with me I have to fix. And when you start talking about the fact that, or hopefully that you don't have to think that way, people get the idea that there's another way to be.
Yeah, I think for me too, when you suddenly realize you don't have to be good at everything.
Yeah.
You and what you're good at, you have to find that. I guess I think of it like the Venn diagram, something you're good at and something you like. If you can get something in that area to do your work, you're going to be much happier than
right.
something you're good at, but you're not at all interested in. Or what I think a lot of us do is what we think we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Try to focus on things. And I think it's especially important for women. But last week and you were there at Compliance Week with somebody really got up and talking about being on boards was very much of a why me? And yeah.
And the question is, why not me?
I don't think I could have said that when I was more junior. If you'll notice, I now talk about longer term in the career that I'm in than the junior versus others, because sometimes I can't believe that I've been around enough to feel that way.
But I do sympathize with more junior people in their careers, because I was that person questioning myself and wondering if thinking about something that happened at work and what could I have done differently. And I think that's all part of the growing and maturing process, and learning your value and your judgment is worthwhile. And I also think that junior people get a lot of messages in the workplace that tell them, hey, your ideas are not valid, or thanks, but we're not going to go that way, or a little bit more at pressure on you to feel bad about what you are thinking and doing. And so that's more of a challenge, I think, is in the earlier stages of a career. But I want people to think about the idea of that it's not always just me. There's a world around me that I can influence and that maybe I can't influence, and that it doesn't really reflect on me. It's separate. And yeah.
I do think some of the younger generations are getting much, much better about that.
Yeah.
Some, but still there's so much of it there, and especially for women, because the system has been the way it has been for a long time.
Right.
I love the whole idea, and I'm starting to try to learn a little bit more about it. Yeah.
She does have a lot of stuff posted, like podcasts and clips and everything. If you follow her, she's a great speaker, and she delivers the message in a very succinct way that's easy to get.
I now follow her because of you. And with that, I take a bunch of your time, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being a part of the podcast and being just a friend and a mentor and a connector for so many. So Amy, thank you so much for being here.
I love GWIC, and it was a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.